Innovate Animal Ag are a think tank promoting the use of technology to improve standards for animals used in agriculture. They are at the forefront of Inovo sexing technology, currently used in 20% of hatcheries in the EU and soon to be introduced to the USA. Without such technology, as many as 7 billion male chicks are killed pointlessly each year. I speak to director Casey Downey on developments. My name is Alex Crisp and welcome to this latest episode of Future of Foods Interviews, which is available on all major podcast platforms and on YouTube. Please subscribe, comment and support. So welcome, Casey Downey, to the Future of Foods podcast. It's very interesting to talk to you. You work for Innovate Animal Ag. You're the program director there. They are a think tank for technology in agriculture. Is that correct? Have I got that right?
That's correct. And thank you for having me and the organization on.
Okay, well, so you are a not-for-profit organization, a think tank. So what does that mean exactly? What are you thinking about there?
Yeah, so essentially what we research are cutting-edge technologies in animal agriculture, and particularly those cutting-edge technologies which have some sort of animal health or animal welfare benefit. And we're excited most by those technologies that have a market-based path to adoption. So technologies that both have improvements to animal welfare, but also the producers and the farmers can get excited about these technologies as well. We also, thinking forward, most technologies, as you very well know, at the beginning, they are not necessarily as cost-effective or cost-effective enough to have that market-based path. And so we're also excited about technologies that perhaps at the moment cost too much for producers to adopt, but long-term with research and more development have the opportunity to kind of be game changers in animal agriculture from an animal welfare perspective, and ultimately we'll get to kind of the right price points for adoption.
Okay, so do people come to you when they have the kernels of an idea and they want you to kind of put the time and effort into kind of bringing the price down? Is that how it works?
So it's a new organization, and as I'm sure we'll discuss, we kind of started this organization with Innovosexing in mind in particular. I think our highest aspirations, or one of the highest aspirations for the organization, is that it will kind of act as a inspiration for entrepreneurs or engineers who are excited about building these types of technologies and are excited about, or perhaps need help with understanding the commercialization path or need connections with producers in order to run like pilot programs or things like that. So I guess we do have some entrepreneurs coming into us right now to kind of discuss the area, but that's also an area that like we really want to grow, and we really want to make the idea that technology does have the potential to improve animal welfare in a practical way, kind of more on the minds of people who care about animal welfare and care about, purchasing, I guess, higher welfare animal products.
Mm. So are you scientists? Are you researchers, academics, or are you business people?
Yeah, so I would say business people. So the founder, Robert Yeaman, he has had a career in Silicon Valley. I myself started in finance and joined a kind of mid-sized startup in what's referred to the alternative data industry, which is kind of, loosely related to finance. And I think what we bring to both the entrepreneurs that work with us, but also the producers that want to understand these technologies and the technology companies themselves. We help them understand, what are the realistic paths to commercialization for these types of technologies. We try to bring the kind of Silicon Valley mindset to an industry that sometimes has been, stuck in tradition or is just kind of very used to doing things the way that it's been done for the last 40 years. And so we're trying to inject some energy into the system. If it's okay with you, like maybe I could discuss a little bit about kind of how we have facilitated the adoption of or helped facilitate the adoption of InnovoSexing in the US. So you so basically, when Robert had founded the organization, he had been reading about InnovoSexing for, maybe 5 years or 10 years prior to the development or the organization. And so he was very curious about why had this not actually taken off in the US? Was there a need for a new technology company? Like, what was going on? What were the bottlenecks to adoption? And that really is like, as an organization, how we think about things. There are technologies that excite us and we think have the potential to improve on-farm animal welfare. And for one reason or the other, these technologies aren't being adopted. And so, can we find what that bottleneck is and see if we, as an organization, can do anything about that bottleneck to make it so that producers are excited about adopting this technology? And ultimately, the technology can roll out. So, within InnovoSexing, the bottleneck that we identified was that when we were speaking with US egg producers, there really wasn't a great understanding of not only how the technology works, but also that the technology was ready for commercial scale. When we were researching the technology, we have, we found that 15%, and in fact, it's now about 20% of the EU's hen flock has actually been gender identified using this technology. And so it really does have kind of this commercial scale that we thought US producers, were not really aware of. And so we spent a lot of time conducting what I guess I would call market research into what was actually going on the ground in Europe. How much was this actually costing the hatcheries, the producers, and ultimately the consumer? And then packaging that information and then basically working with the US egg industry to develop a better understanding among US egg producers of where this technology is, why it could benefit them, and basically how it can be adopted in the US. And so that's kind of how we thought about the problem. We found a couple of specialty egg producers who were really excited about kind of being on the forefront of bringing this technology into the US. They recognize that, there is a large and growing subset of consumers who are willing to pay up for products that are produced more in line with kind of their own morals or with better welfare practices. And so there's really this big opportunity for the US egg sector that they're beginning to grasp. And now that InnovoSexing has been announced for the US market, come 2025, there should, we anticipate, be a lot of competition on the egg shelf to promote these new types of products. Yeah, so ultimately what this technology is, what an InnovoSexing machine is, it's placed inside of the hatchery and it's quite a large piece of capital equipment. And so, a small egg producer, for instance, can't simply go to an InnovoSexing company and say, "Hey, we want this machine." That's not really how it works. What they have to do is they have to work with their hatchery in the United States, and that hatchery has to bring over a InnovoSexing machine from Europe, where all of the companies that are commercialized currently are. And so right now, where kind of we stand is that it has been announced that there are machines coming over for kind of later this year, which means that the first kind of InnovoSexed chicks will be produced later this year. And then it takes around 20 to 24 weeks for those chicks to start actually laying eggs. So sometime kind of in the beginning of next year, you should start to see these eggs hit the shelf. But to answer your question, I guess a little more specifically, Our understanding and what we anticipate is that there will be multiple egg producers buying these InnovaSex chicks from hatcheries inside of the US.
Okay, can you just very quickly, for anyone who's not familiar with what InnovaSexing is, just kind of briefly explain it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, one of the things that a lot of consumers do not know, and in fact, only around 10% of consumers in the US currently know that for every hen that lays eggs, there is a male brother that is culled or killed by the industry basically right after hatch. And the reason for this goes back quite a long time, actually. So basically, there are two breeds of birds. So there's quite a few breeds of birds, but there's two kind of main schisms. And one of these is the bird that is called a broiler, which produces the meat that consumers eat. And one of these is the egg layer, which produces the eggs that consumers eat. So basically, over the last decades, these kind of different lines of birds have gotten more and more specialized by what are referred to in the industry as genetics companies to do what they do better. So, for the broiler, it means producing more meat for less feed and growing faster. And for the egg layer, it means producing more eggs with less feed. And so, as you, with say a broiler, as that kind of is optimized to grow faster from a meat perspective, it actually reduces the amount of eggs that that broiler female would produce. Similarly, with the egg laying breeds, they're just not really good at growing. And so, if you were to, for instance, grow a male of the egg laying line, it would basically cost a lot more money, for, like, say, a pound of that type of meat than it would for a broiler breed. And what we've seen in, say, Europe, where occasionally growing these layer males is, for the first couple years of the culling ban, it was a practice that had taken off. Consumers didn't like the consistency of the meat as well, so there was something about the meat that was very different than kind of what they were used to. Does that explain your question?
Oh, it
Or does that
certainly
explain
does. I
the
mean, that's in good detail. So it's, I mean, what you're describing is a level of cruelty in the system, I suppose, in that the male chicks are culled straight away. But yes, I mean the whole system, I suppose, is rife with cruelty because those broiler hens are then kind of grown to a size, and we've heard about it. We've heard about all of that, and that's not what this is about. So the whole point of InnovaSexing is to avoid those male chicks being culled at birth, which seems like an incredible waste. And there's some, there are apparently hundreds of millions, billions even, of male chicks that are culled every year. So that's
Yeah,
the
it's
purpose.
so it's around 6 to 7 billion, and everyone involved in both the egg industry and folks who know about this practice and care about animal welfare, everyone wants a solution to this problem. No one likes the fact that this is what's going on. And so what we are particularly excited about with InnovaSexing technology is this is a very concrete challenge that is ultimately going to be solved. We've seen a really significant uptake of this technology in Europe. We're going to continue to see this technology being uptake in the United States. And so this is a challenge, an ethical challenge that ultimately will be solved, because of technology.
And these hatcheries, they sound expensive, these machines that are going to be brought over from Europe. Why can't they be made in the USA, for example? Are they really kind of technically very difficult?
So, it's an interesting question. I think one of the things that spurred development of these machines, particularly in Europe, is that you did see both the German government and the French government ban the practice of chick culling. And so it was an instance where, you basically government intervention actually spurred the development of the technology. We kind of relate it similarly to kind of the early age of the catalytic converter. So the government banned certain, smog products from vehicles, or they set targets, and it basically made a market for the development of technology like the catalytic converter to solve some of these exhaust issues. And so I think what has happened in Europe is very similar. There are labs and researchers and companies inside of the US working on this problem and considering, new solutions. But what I would say is that all of the commercialized technologies are currently in Europe. I guess another point that's kind of interesting on this topic of cost is, in some ways, this technology, right? The first machine really went into commercial practice around late 2018, 2019. And so it has not been on the market that long. And there are a variety of kind of approaches to InnovoSexing that are in commercial practice, but there's also a variety of approaches that are in research and development and that also have a lot of promise. And so I think we haven't yet reached kind of an equilibrium of, where are we going to be in 10 years with InnovoSexing? What is the cost profile going to look like? What types of approaches are we going to take? I think we just don't know. And so I wouldn't count out the US yet, in terms of creating a successful InnovoSexing company, but right now the machines are being imported from Europe. Even though it is a capital expense for the hatcheries, over $1 million for sure, there are a couple things that make that capital expense a little bit easier to swallow, so to speak. So the first is some of these InnovoSexing technology companies actually have business models where they will actually lease the machine to the hatchery or give the machine to the hatchery and then charge a per test fee for the InnovoSexing so that the hatchery doesn't have an upfront cost. Others will sell the machine, but the hatchery is basically charging, or the hatchery is going to increase the price of the chicks that they're selling to the farmer in order to recoup that capital investment. And then once that chick turns into a hen and starts laying eggs, basically the added cost of InnovoSexing is really, like, at this point, around an added cent or even less than a cent per egg on the consumer shelf, which is a lot less, for instance, than, say, the added cost of cage-free or pasture-raised or some of these other, like, specialty production methods.
And I
So it's
suppose
quite
those,
cheap in our mind.
yes, I suppose those eggs can then be sold for a premium for being kind of cruelty-free eggs or something along those lines.
I think as they enter the US market, it's not without risk, right? It might, there's very little consumer understanding of this issue. And I think, as these eggs start to hit the shelf, as these egg producers start to think about how to talk about this issue with consumers, because it is a very delicate issue, they probably will, be charging a excess premium for this. That said, I think, long term, this technology, which we can talk about in a bit, has the kind of the power to unlock a bunch of different farming practices and other technologies that can really just be a lot better for the producers and a lot better for the chicks. So I think long term, we will see a, the prices come a little bit even lower and kind of these new technologies that are unlocked because of InnovoSexing, they will now kind of become more standard practice in the industry.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about how the technology works? Is it a case of the egg is laid and you can scan the egg and find out what sex the embryo is, or is it working earlier than that? How does the technology actually work?
Got it. So, as I was mentioning, there are a variety of approaches. I'll talk about the two broad classes of approaches that are currently in the market, currently at hatcheries. So the first is what we would basically refer to as like image-based or like scanning-based or non-invasive technologies. One of the companies, Orbum, uses basically an MRI to look inside the egg and basically pick up on what gonads the developing embryo has, and then determine using AI and machine learning whether that is a male or female. Another company, which is called AAT, has a Chegg machine, and they use what's called hyperspectral analysis, which also is basically just looking through the eggshell. Now, the other broad category of machines that are on the market, we refer to as liquid-based analysis. And so what these machines do is they either use a laser to make a tiny hole in the egg, and then they basically pull out a small amount of fluid from what's called allantoic fluid. And functionally, the testing depends on per company, but one of the ways you can think about it is it's almost like a pregnancy test. Like they are trying to figure out what hormones are in that fluid sample, and then using those hormones to understand whether it's either hormones or DNA to understand whether it's a male or a female. So those are the two approaches that are currently commercially available. There are approaches, there are genetic editing approaches, and these approaches actually do work before the hatching eggs are even set inside the incubators. There is a lot of questions among the industry and among consumers of whether genetic editing approaches are the best way to do things. I'm very agnostic about that. But essentially, one of the ways that these genetic edit approaches work is you basically add a genetic edit into the parents. And basically, what this genetic does is if the egg is laid and the embryo is a male, one of these companies that currently exist, basically there's an added gene that makes the egg glow, essentially under black light. And so as before it goes into the hatchery, you can stick them under, say, a black light and figure out which of these eggs are male, and you can remove them really prior to any embryo development. Another company basically does something similar, but instead of changing the like color or the glow of the egg, they have a genetic edit that essentially stops male embryos from even developing at all. And the really cool thing about these approaches is that the genetic edit that's in the parent line, it only is actually affecting the male embryos. And so when you look at the female embryos and ultimately the chicks, there's actually no genetic edits that have been made to that particular bird. And so governments like the UK and also, I believe, Australia have declared that eggs that are ultimately produced in this fashion are not considered GMO.
Okay. Wow, that's fascinating. That's very interesting. I suppose there's a lot of technology, agricultural technology coming on tap with precision fermentation and cellular agriculture around the corner. There are companies like FOMO and Anigo Bio who produce dairy products through these different ways. Do you think what's I mean, do you think these are going to impact the need for in vivo testing in the future?
It's quite possible long term. I think the way that I think about that is it's just very hard to know. We've seen that it has been very difficult to scale cultivated or precision fermented solutions. It's very difficult to get exactly the type of texture, consistency, taste that consumers are desiring through, say, alternative or plant-based meat. And so I personally, like, I don't want to rely on that as the only way to improve the system. And I think there's a diverse amount of approaches to these problems. And I think where we kind of sit as an organization is, we want to make sure that if there is kind of an increase in animal product consumption, that there are technologies that are available to kind of bring the practices on farm more in line with what consumers want. And, we really know that, most consumers, in fact, like broad majorities, they really do claim and do care about animal welfare. I think their purchasing decisions don't always reflect that. And I think that, there are a number of reasons for that. But I think these technologies have the opportunity to really kind of like bring production more in line with where a lot of consumers are, which is they don't want to give up their animal products, but they do want things done in a better way.
Yeah, so I noticed your company did some research, some consumer attitude research. So this is what you found. What were some of the interesting findings of that research?
Yeah, I mean, I think what for us, the most interesting things were number one, animal welfare really is a bipartisan and popular issue. I mean, I think in some of your previous writings, you had noted some research from, say, Bryant Research, which talks about really large percentages of consumers wanting to even ban factory farming. I think that oftentimes the consumers that are saying that, like, I think they don't quite understand like exactly where their products are coming from. And I think broadly, like what we have found in our research is that consumers don't think vegetarianism or veganism, any sorts of diet changes, are the solution that they want for this. They much prefer like technological solutions that can bring, as I was mentioning, like the types of practices on farm more in line with what they view as responsible animal stewardship. And I think technology like really does open up a lot of doors for that, where you can have you can just restore consumer trust in a lot of the practices in animal agriculture.
Yeah. So it sounds like the in vivo testing is going to be quite expensive for a long time. So how soon do you think it'll be before the sort of take up of this becomes normal, in
Yeah, so I guess I think it may be a long time or a decent amount of time before inovosexing is exactly on par with manual sexing of chicks, which is the current practice in hatcheries. That said, what I think is that even right now, there is this people will say this is, very expensive, things like that. Ultimately, the way that I look at that problem is that the vast majority of consumers are willing to pay more when asked for this particular type of production process. So, eggs without chick culling. They're willing to pay, half of consumers are willing to pay over 6 cents per egg. And just as a just kind of to bring back what I said earlier, even though the cost of, say, a test right now can add anywhere from $1.50 to, say, $3.50 per hen, when you think about the fact that that hen lays, in America, well over 350 eggs during their life cycle, you're talking about an added cost that ultimately is less than a cent per egg. And so I don't really view that as an incredibly expensive technology. There's a large amount of consumers, even short of government bans or of non-cage, or sorry, of caged systems, there's still a lot of consumers that pay a lot of extra money for eggs that are produced cage-free or pasture-raised. And so I think the added cost of inovosexing is really, marginal relative to those things. One interesting thing is, you have, say, a company like Vital Farms, which is a specialty egg producer in the US market, and they have about a tenth of the amount of birds of the biggest egg producer in the US, And yet, Vital Farms, when you think of it by revenue, is actually one of the best performing or highest revenue egg producers just because they're selling eggs that are pasture raised and more specialty. And so there really is a broad consumer segment. In the US, the folks that are shopping at Whole Foods, HEB, Sprouts, who are really interested in, like paying premiums for products that are more in line with how they want their animals to be raised.
Yeah, I suppose it's a different, because we run the risk of thinking of egg producers as being, having perhaps like a couple of thousand hens that they have, but actually it's more in the kind of hundreds of millions of hens that they have kind of laying the eggs, don't they? So it's proper industrial egg producing companies, so they can afford, and so they can afford the extra kind of cost up front, I suppose, can't they?
So there are so I think there's some nuance to that, which is some of these producers, like for instance Vital Farms, and the reason I'm going back to them is they're kind of one of the more well-known, you'll find them on every Whole Foods shelf specialty brands in the US. They oftentimes will employ basically contract growing models. So they themselves won't always own the hens. So this is true with a number of especially specialty egg producers. And so that added cost of in-ovo-sexing per hen for a, let's say, a smaller farmer who is producing for, say, Vital Farms, if they have a flock of 100,000 hens, for instance, starting to buy these hens now with a premium of $3 per hen really can add up. And so it's possible that there may need to be some sort of model where, say, the producers that want their farmers to purchase these hens may have to kind of give a loan up front or something like that to make the economics work. But sometimes it is, it really is like smaller sized operations that are buying these things, but ultimately those eggs do feed into much larger companies, which do have, as you mentioned, millions of birds producing.
Yeah, it was when you it was kind of it sort of illustrated the reality of when you showed that somebody would manually sex the chicks when they're born. So somebody is picking them up and looking to see if they're a male or a female. If it's a male, it gets thrown in the grinder. If it's a female, it's kind of put in a cage. And this is somebody's job to kind of do this all day long. When you think about it, when you think of the reality, because I suppose this doesn't happen very much when people are buying eggs in the supermarket. They don't think of the kind of, the life, the process, the actual process that's kind of that has produced their egg.
And as I was kind of mentioning earlier, you're right that the challenge of chick culling is not one that anyone wishes exists currently, right? Like everyone really does want a solution to chick culling. And in terms of the labor involved, yeah, that can I think that can be a quite difficult job. The other thing about this machine is that, ultimately long term, this will be a, like many technologies, a labor saving device. And this job of the chicken sexer can actually be quite specialized. And so hatcheries oftentimes will struggle to find the specialized laborers that they need. And so that's kind of another reason why, long term, we think in-ovo-sexing has really the ability to kind of replace that kind of manual sexing process. It's also just good to reduce the handling of these chicks in the hatchery as well. And so that's another thing that in-ovo-sexing does. I'm sure the chicken sexers are trying their best to not hurt the chickens or things like that. But at the end of the day, like humans are very imprecise with what we do with our hands relative to an egg, which is a lot easier to manipulate than like a moving, alive chick.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, Casey. I just have one last question for you before you go. I mean, what was it that brought you to this industry? Do you have a background in farming as well as finance and that? I mean, what's your personal motivation?
So I don't have a background. I don't have a background in farming. I think what really excited me about this organization is, we are seeing this kind of, progress in technology in so many industries, in the United States, globally, et cetera. And, I really believe in the power of technology to, solve some of the really important challenges that we face. Like, for instance, climate change is another really important challenge that technologies like solar panels, and many other technologies, carbon capture, et cetera, are going to, really change the way we think about that problem. Instead of approaching it from, kind of a like degrowth perspective, we can approach it from a let's innovate this problem away perspective. And that's not discourse that has really been talked about in terms of animal farming. And so, even if technology, in fact, I'll grant that technology won't solve every challenge that we have in animal agriculture, but technology has the potential and the promise to solve a lot of those challenges. And so, I think it's really something that I want to be working on, and that I think entrepreneurs and engineers should potentially consider devoting their career to, because there's a lot of open opportunities, to improve things in a way that, as I was mentioning, can benefit both the chicks, the producers, and ultimately the consumers.
Yeah, and just I just had a thought before you go. So
Yeah.
clearly you haven't sold any of these hatcheries in the US yet. So who funds you? How are you earning money at the if you don't mind such a direct question?
No. Yeah, no, we don't mind at all. So first off though, on your point about not having sold one of the hatcheries, we don't we certainly are not trying to sell machines, but our work has directly led to the adoption of one of these machines in a US hatchery. It's
Okay.
not it's currently like being shipped, it's not literally in the United States yet, but as I was mentioning, by the end of this year, the machine, if everything goes correctly, the machine will be on US soil, and then there will start to be eggs on the shelves kind of in spring or summer of next year that are produced without chick culling. In
Why is
terms of
it
where we get
taking
our
so
funding,
long to get there? If it's being shipped now, why will it only be the end of the year? I did,
So these machines, hatcheries are they're really mechanized environments. They have a lot of big machinery, and these machines, they do take up space. They take up power. They take up a lot of resources, construction. You have to train the laborers on them, and so basically, it's just a process of actually getting the machine up and running, testing it to make sure that it's working correctly, etc.
Okay.
In terms of how our organization is funded, so we are a nonprofit organization. We are funded by grant making organizations that generally do have an interest in animal welfare. And one of these organizations, for instance, is one of the main funders of what is called the Egg Tech Prize. And the Egg Tech Prize is essentially a prize for the technology that can do InnovoSexing, meeting certain parameters. And so that organization, obviously funding that, has an interest and really wants this challenge of chick culling to be solved. And they thought that the approach that we wanted to take, which was disseminating this type of information about InnovoSexing and really connecting people, like making sure they understand the value proposition, they thought that that was an approach that they thought would work in the system. And so that's the type of organization that we're funded by.
Okay, fascinating. Yes, that's been great. Thank you very much for your time. It's been wonderful talking to you. I feel like I've learned a lot. Everybody else will as well. So thank you very much for coming on Future Foods interviews, and good luck with that.
Thanks, Alex. Appreciate you having me on. Have a great day.